Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Earlier this week, Michael Jordan's agent, David Falk, said that in today's NBA, MJ would have averaged 50 to 60 points with no hand checking. He also added that he would have shot 75% from the floor and would have been virtually unstoppable. Shannon, is there any truth to all that?
No. The great, one of the best and worst things that's happened in 2020 is The Last Dance. It's been great because with the COVID-19, there's no sports going on, no live sports going on, Skip. And so there's not anything for us to watch and take our time away. And so we've been focused on this, and kudos to ESPN for releasing it early and giving us something to talk about. But what is also the downside is that everybody starts to embellish. You know, the home run that Mickey Mantle hit out of old Detroit Tiger Stadium, Skip, is now at 700 feet. It started out at 505, and then it went to 525, then it went to 550, then it went to 600. And now, almost 50 years later, it's at 40 years later, Skip, it's at 700 feet. And that's what we see with Michael Jordan. Now, he averaged a tick over 30, I think 30.14. I think Wilt is 30.12 for a career. Now, Michael Jordan has 31 career 50-point games. But he's supposed to do that for 82 games in a season. Now, Wilt is the only man ever to average 50 points a game. And it took him 39 shots, Skip, to do that. And now, it took him 39 shots, and all Wilt are shooting are dunks, layups, and little sky hooks. And he shot 50% from the floor. And he made 10 free throws a night and averaged 50. So Wilt has 118 50-point games. He has more than the next five closest players combined. Let that sink in for a second. But Michael Jordan, you see, Skip, if he want to say, well, you know what, I believe in today's game, Michael could probably average somewhere around 35 because we see what James Harden is doing. So imagine what James Harden is doing, 35 points a night. Michael Jordan is going to get 15 more points per night. Man, stop, Skip. Oh, Lord. Michael is great. He doesn't need embellishing. He doesn't need it. But it's not good enough. He would average 50 or 60. Skip, you know damn well Michael Jordan ain't averaging no 50 or 60 points in no game. Do you know how many shots it's going to take him to get up? That's why he only averaged 37 one year. The toll that it took. And when you average it out, he averaged 34 career. Man, they start to get on my nerve with all this embellishment. And Michael Jordan was this. If you didn't know better, Michael Jordan won every single game, scored 52 points in every single game, and they won the finals every single year. You do realize they had finals in the 80s. They just didn't resume the finals in 91 once Michael started winning. They had them from the very first time he entered the NBA. And even when he left, when he was with the Wizards, they played finals. So stop this, Skip. He's not averaging no 50. He's not averaging no 60. If you want to say somewhere between 35 and 38, I might be willing to go there. But he's not averaging 50 or 60 points a game. That's not happening.
I am loving this. It is killing you, and I am loving it. Because the truth is finally being revealed for all to see, even the blind witnesses who idolize and blindly defend LeBron James, led by the king of the king worshipers, the guy I'm looking down the barrel at right now, who's up in his palatial estate up in Bel Air, and he swept under his thick pile carpet up there. I don't know, maybe he's got hardwood floors. I have no idea. But the fact that, yeah, Michael did average 37 one year, 86-87 season. That was after he had scored 49-63 at Boston Garden against the Celtics in two playoff games. So he came off those games, off the 63-point game, and averaged 37 in an era in which they allowed defenders to play football. The game that you know the best, football, was played in the NBA in the late 80s. And it wasn't just hand checking that was allowed. It was clutching and grabbing and shoving and hard fouling. There was no such thing really as a flagrant foul. You had to hospitalize somebody to get a flagrant foul in the late 80s. It was just seen part of the game that you hard fouled any and everybody, superstars also included. They were not protected in the late 80s. So yeah, Jordan took huge punishment to average 37 a game in 87 that he would not have to take now. So if I took 1987, 37 point a game, Michael Jordan, put him into now, when as David Falk, his agent, said they play virtually no defense, which is virtually true on a nightly basis. There is no hand checking allowed. He could easily average 50 a game, easily. He was the greatest mid-range jump shooter we have ever seen. He was virtually automatic from mid-range, 15, 17, 14 feet. He could separate, wheel and deal, shake and bake, and create separation with hang time like we'd never seen before. And he was sweet shooting it off the glass. The glass was his friend. The bank was open often for Michael Jordan, and not just because he was selling so many sneakers. He was making so many glass shots, sweet, soft bank shots that allowed him to be the most lethal mid-range shooter we've ever seen, which is obviously LeBron's biggest flaw and weakness, the biggest hole in LeBron's game.
This is not about LeBron.
He doesn't have much of a mid-range jump shot. Well, I'm just trying to tell you, The GOAT argument is being finished once and for all because, yeah, that's true. Michael won 10 scoring titles to LeBron's one. And, yeah, if you dropped that 1987 Michael into now, are you kidding me? And David Falk quoted Rory Sparrow, another one of his clients, a 12-year point guard in the league who was seen as one of the smartest players of that era. Rory Sparrow told David Falk, if you doubled Michael, he could score 100% of the time. If you tripled him, he'd score 50% of the time, which brought us back to that closeout game against the Lakers in the 91 finals when Michael broke through. And what did we see in the closeout game? Phil, early in the game, first quarter, telling Michael in a sideline huddle, hey, who's going to be open? Well, Paxson was, because they were triple-teaming Michael Jordan because he had destroyed them in games 2, 3, and 4 in ways Magic's Showtime Lakers had never been destroyed. They could not contend with him. So, yeah.
Oh.
Finally, three Lakers are following Michael everywhere he goes, and they were having a hard time. And Phil said, Michael, who's going to be open? Well, they're not even guarding John Paxson, who's a fine mid-range jump shooter in his own right.
Yes.
So he wasn't shooting threes. He was shooting twos. He was getting open 15-foot jumpers on the wing, and he made 9 out of 12 two-point shots, not 1 3-point shot. That's how open he was. I'm sorry. You know what? 60 would be a possibility if you took 87, Jordan, because you want to talk about assassin, killer will, bring it every night. Attack mode like I've never seen. Yeah, 50 for sure, 60 maybe.
Skip, if that's the case, why didn't it, when he was double and triple team against the Bad Boy Pistons, why didn't he get 50? It's just like now.
Because they were knocking him on his butt.
Okay, if we're going to put Jordan in today's game, you see how when James Harden get cooking, they start doubling and tripling and get the ball out of his hand. Just like Kobe in his historic season. They started doubling and tripling it and getting the ball out of his hands. That's what they would do to Mike. Skip, you're not first of all, you're not scoring 50 in today's game. You're not scoring 60. And see, that's the thing. Everybody, and I know, everybody's era was the toughest. Everybody's era had the best players. But it's hard for me, that evolution, that human beings have gotten bigger, stronger, and faster. What about athletes that have limits, ends to spend on the best nutrition, the best therapist, the best trainers. But now, Michael, Skip, stop this. Man, look, it's okay. It is okay. Jordan was great. If you want to say he's the greatest player of all time, okay, fine. I'm done with it. I know who I think is, but this embellishment has got to go. So I guess if we put LeBron James back in the 50s at 6'9", 250, what was he going to average? He probably averaged 45 points a night, right? Since we doing it like that, because they were so small. There's a thing called evolution. There was a time the offensive linemen weighed 180 to 200 pounds. Now they're between 295 and 315, Skip. Men, people get bigger. They get stronger. They get faster. This notion, oh, they don't play no defense. Stop it. James Harden is as skilled as anyone. Can shoot the three better than Jordan. Gets to the free throw line just as much. Good with either hand. He had 36 last year. Kobe 1 year had 35. Jordan best was 37. Wilt has, four of the highest five, six scoring averages in NBA history. Wilt shot 50% from the field. Customary. Just about every year he led the league in field goal percentage while leading the league in scoring. Man, stop.
Wilt Chamberlain was 7 feet, 1 inch tall, and he was a track star at Kansas University. I give you that.
Yes.
Freakish size and athletic ability. Freakish.
Yes.
But the all-time freakiest athlete I ever witnessed in my time, my many years covering all these games, was Michael Jeffrey Jordan. I've never seen such cat quickness with such strength and acrobatic and gymnastic ability all rolled into one with such killer will. James Harden is supremely skilled. I give you that. But when it comes to killer will, when it comes to athletically, competitively slit your throat, James doesn't have that. He's never had that. Hence, playoff disappearances against my Spurs and against the Golden State Warriors. It's just not the same. Michael brought it on a nightly basis in ways I've never seen anybody bring it every dribble of every game. He was possessed.
What about Kobe?
He was obsessed. He was driven, even beyond Kobe. I've never seen anything like it. I loved Kobe, but he wasn't quite there in all-out nightly fire the way Michael was. And in the end, I've got to read the one money quote from David Falk, because this sums it up for me. He says, for anyone watching The Last Dance, unless you're legally blind, you can't possibly think there's another player who ever played who is remotely in the same league with Michael Jordan. That's it. It's just period, end of story. And I'm so thankful that even the blind witnesses out there who are watching The Last Dance are having their eyes opened to the fact, the historical all-time game over fact, Jordan was just better than anybody, especially LeBron James. And I appreciate ESPN for airing this documentary. And it's not exaggerating or embellishing. It's enlightening all of us. It's even reminding me of just how great Jordan was. And I covered The Last Dance.
Well, Skip, since you're going to put it like that, I'm going to say, if Jerry Rice had played in today's game, he would have 2,500 receiving yards in the season. And Lawrence Taylor would have 30 sacks. Reggie White would have 30 sacks in a game like today. Skip, stop this notion. Okay, like I said, I believe LeBron is the GOAT. Okay, many people do not. If you just because you don't believe, that doesn't mean you have to embellish. Oh, he'll shoot 75% from the floor. Wilt Chamberlain with dunks, Dwight Howard, Ben Wallace, guys, DeAndre Jordan, all they do is dunk and lay the ball up. Never shot 75% from the floor. Now Michael Jordan is going to shoot 75% from the floor shooting jumpers? Man, Skip, stop this. No, that's what I'm saying. And remember, if you tell one lie, Skip, I don't get upset when people lie to me. I get upset because you know why I don't get upset, Skip? For the simple fact, it's not that you lied to me. It's the fact that I can't believe anything else that comes out of your mouth. The fact that he said he would shoot 75%, I'm done. The fact that he said 50, 60%, I'm done. Even if Michael Jordan was considered the GOAT, I can't believe anything that he says because he's dispelled that by putting out bull jive. No mercy.
Hey, Undisputed listeners, time for some exciting news. Fox Sports Digital, the team that produces this podcast, has been nominated for a Webby Award for our coverage of the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup in Paris. I was there covering the U.S. Women's National Team's incredible run as repeat champs. C'était vraiment incroyable. It was truly such an amazing opportunity and experience. So many stories I was lucky enough to help tell. If you enjoyed our work, we'd love it if you could visit vote.webbyawards.com. That's vote.webbyawards.com to support our entries. Fox Sports was nominated for Best Overall Social Coverage for our nightly show, Fox Sports World Cup Now, and for a digital feature we produced on Brandi Chastain, who looks back 20 years later on her famous PK that won the 1999 Women's World Cup. Thanks again, Undisputed listeners. We appreciate your voting consideration. And now, back to the show.
No mercy.
An anonymous AFC coach said that the Packers drafting Jordan Love to back up Aaron Rodgers is very similar to when the Broncos drafted Tommy Maddox to back up John Elway in 1992. Elway made it clear afterwards he was upset with the pick because he wanted a receiver. But the message from Coach Dan Reeves was that he was in control and not Elway, which is very similar to what we're seeing in Green Bay. So, Shannon, you were there. How similar are these situations?
They're very similar, Skip. I remember this like yesterday. Skip, we had just lost the AFC Championship game. You remember why I told you this on Monday. We had just lost the AFC Championship game. We lost 10-7 to Buffalo. They would go on to later lose. And John, knowing, you know, seeing our situation, wanted a receiver. John wanted someone that he felt could help us win. And the selection of a quarterback, John's thinking, hell, everybody's thinking, how the hell is this guy going to help us win? Now, Skip, remind you, John was just going into his 10th season. You know, John was drafted in 83. 92 would have been his 10th NFL season. So John was about 32, and he's playing well. And this happened. Now, there had been some rumblings. And, Skip, I'm just going to go ahead and give a little bit. I ain't going to give all the tea, but I'm going to give you a little bit of the tea. Now, it was told to me, John called his own plays. Back then, a lot of quarterbacks called their own plays. And John called his own plays. And so Mike Shanahan, who later became the head coach, was the offensive coordinator. John calling his own plays. Dan is thinking, I wonder what John's going to call here. Mike says, I believe he'll call this situation. He'll call this play. Lo and behold, John would call that play. They were scripting plays, but they didn't tell Dan. Dan fired Mike at the end of the season, took a quarterback. Now, prior to the 91 season, Skip, they had tried to trade John. People didn't know this. They had a deal. They were having a deal in place. They were having discussion with Washington. Mr. Boland had to intervene and says, that's not happening on my watch. John Beek was the GM. Lyde Huggins was the player personnel director. They were doing this, you know, Mr. Boland let them have a lot of control. Dan had the ultimate say. They were going to move on from John, and Mr. Boland nipped that in the bud. After the 92 season, they fired Coach Reeves. There was always bad blood. Skip, we would go to training camp. It was kind of like Green Bay. We rode bikes to practice. Everybody bring their bike up. We would ride bikes to practice, lock them up in the gymnasium, get on the bikes, go back. Two people had golf carts. John Elway had a golf cart. Dan Reeves had a golf cart. They would drive by each other, not look at each other. And I'm like, I don't think that's how it's supposed to. Skip, you know, I'm young, Skip. I'm not the player that I would have become. You know, I'm not really. But, I hear guys talking about, man, that thing is getting really contentious between Coach Reeves and John. I'm like, I just think it's odd they don't really do a whole lot of speaking unless it's on the practice field and it's, okay, play call, yada, yada, yada. But, Skip, what you're seeing here is that Dan wanted to show, you might want a receiver. I run this ship. We're going to take what I want. Aaron Rodgers probably wanted a receiver, but what the general manager and the head coach say, we run this ship. You don't run nothing here but your mouth, and we're tired of it. So this is what we're going to do. And, Skip, it's hard to see a scenario that they're going to fire a guy that just went 13-3. So this might be a situation where John won that power struggle. Mr. Bolin fired Dan, I don't believe Aaron Rodgers will win this power struggle. And he'll probably be the one that's going to have to uproot and take and plant somewhere else.
Hmm. So, by the way, you said that John felt like he needed a receiver in that next draft after you lost 10-7 at Buffalo in the AFC Championship mm-hmm. game. But I right. thought he had big play Shea. I thought he had Shannon Sharp on a Hall of Fame trajectory. You caught three balls in the AFC Championship game. That's not enough. He needed six or eight from his tight enough. End, and you could only give him three against that Buffalo defense?
But here's the thing, Skip. But the next year, I went 7, 14, I think I caught 52 my third year, which was 92, Skip. And that's how it started because the receivers started getting nicked, and John would just feed me. I like, feed your boy. I'll put that work in back then, Skip. And then it took off. But, you know, the three amigos, Skip, they were starting to get old. And they were small. Everybody was going to the big receiver. You know, you saw the Jared Rices and the Sterling Sharps and the Michael Irvins. They was going to the big receivers, and we had these small receivers. When you have a small receiver, that's good, Skip, if they're open. But tough, contested throws, it gets hard for a guy that's 5'8", 5'9", as opposed to a guy that's 6'3", 6'4", or 6'2". And so John wanted someone that he could help us now, not somebody that was going to help down the road. And John's like, oh, so that's what you want to do? That's how you want to play it? Okay, we'll play it like that then.
Okay, so John Elway was actually 31 when they drafted Tommy Maddox mm-hmm. out of UCLA with the 25th mm-hmm. overall pick. So it's similar, late yeah. first round, take a flyer on, because right. you're obviously in the AFC Championship game, so you're drafting at the bottom of the first round. And correct. Yet it's surprising to me that John had, he didn't have his best year that year, but I think he was very unhappy. To your point, he was 13 touchdowns to 12 mm-hmm. interceptions, but you did go 12-4. You did get to the championship mm-hmm. game. You did lose a 3-point game, not a 30-point game. And yet John was quoted as saying recently that there's no way he would have come back the next year if Dan Reeves had still been there, because he said the previous 3 years, to your point, had been hell. He was hell. Not having fun yeah. being coached by Dan Reeves. And it had gotten so contentious that one of them did have to go. And to your point, Mr. Bolin yeah. stepped in and had to pick a side. But I'm surprised he didn't pick a side before the draft, which was in what, sooner. April, I assume that year, sometime in April. Why didn't yes, he yes, yes. go ahead and make it take his stand against Dan Reeves before the draft? Because it sounds like Dan had a lot of input into taking Tommy yes. Maddox to provide him yes. some leverage against John Elway, right?
Well, Skip, I'm not so sure that that Dan divulged everything about what they were going to take. I'm not so sure that Mr. B knew that he was going to take, because Mr. B yeah. was very hands-off, Skip. He wasn't one of those owners that, yeah, he might be sitting there, and if they took a kicker, he's like, oh, he must be pretty good. He trusted. When Mr. B hired someone, Skip, he trusted them to do their job. He put Dan, and Dan had John Beek and Lyle Huggins. He trusted them to do their job. I'm glad John said it, because, Skip, I could sense it, but like I said, Skip, I wasn't observant. Hell, I'm just trying to keep my job. I'm not worried about somebody else getting the job. But you knew, Skip, you knew it was just like, because most of the conversation was between Mike and John. And I understand the offensive coordinator is going to be close, but they had a very, very, very close relationship. And because remember, Skip, he was when Mike came back, Skip, because Mike came back in 90 because he had got fired from the Raiders, remember? He was John's original coordinator. He gets the head job at Oakland. Al Davis fires him 20 games into his season. He comes back after 20 games. He comes back. He starts off. He was not the offensive coordinator. Chan Gailey was the coordinator. Chan Gailey gets the job at Birmingham. Then Mike gets promoted to OC. Man, Skip. Mm-hmm. I'm glad John telling this, because I ain't going to put all the business out there, Skip.
I got it. So here's the point. John was only 31, and clearly mm-hmm. he had a whole lot left in the tank, because he made six more Pro Bowls after that. And obviously, yes. thanks in part to you also and Terrell Davis, a lot. He won two Super Bowls. He played in two more and won two Super Bowls after he'd gotten blown out right. in the three previous that he had played to the drafting of Tommy Maddox. So Tommy Maddox right. comes in the next year, you'll remember, 92, John got hurt and missed four games, and Tommy played four games and wasn't very good. He went 0-for-4 in those four games, and I witnessed one because I was covering the Cowboys, who on December 6th of that yeah. year played at your place, right? Remember this one? And nope. my Cowboys yeah. won 31-27. Do you remember that? And I don't know what yeah. happened to Shea Sharp, but he caught only three balls for 16 yards. I don't know. Maybe it's Tommy Maddox's fault. I don't know. I didn't notice Shea Sharp that day.
They were using your boy as a fullback. Skip, John missed like, Skip, John got hurt early. John missed like eight games that year because he came back. We won a game, and we needed to beat Kansas City, and we would have been the wild card in 92. We ended up losing to Kansas City the last game of the season because that was when Coach Reeves was alternating Tommy Maddox and Sean Moore, kind of like what he did with Roger Staubach and Craig Morton, Skip. That was the first time I'd ever seen. I've seen running backs alternate series yeah. or wide receivers come in and out, but I had never seen a situation where quarterbacks, one quarterback would come in, run a play, he comes off the field, then the next quarterback would come in and run a play. And I'm like, okay. this seems right. odd. But, Skip, it was really contentious okay. there. And I think it's going to be like that in Green Bay this okay. year, too.
So let me fast forward this into this current situation in Green Bay. The betting sites are telling you now that Green Bay's 13-3 was way overrated and fluky because Fox Bet, as we speak, has the over-under on Green Bay wins going to next year at 9. So they're saying the target is 9-7 next year. Caesars has the over-under right now at 8.5. They're saying it's just barely above a 500 target for the Green Bay Packers. So Gutekunst, the GM, and obviously LaFleur, the coach, they're seeing the handwriting of, wait a second, we know we weren't that great last year. We weren't 13-3 great, and we need to look to the future because Aaron wasn't as good as the numbers would indicate. And just because we got to the AFC Championship game and got blown out, isn't indicative of where we're heading the next year and the next, hence Jordan Love. Well, all I know, bottom line, is Jordan Love better be better than Tommy Maddox ever was. Tommy had a stint in Pittsburgh as the starter, and he was okay. Right. But they need Jordan Love to be Aaron Rodgers for this to work out.
Skip, one of the things that rubbed John the wrong way is that the guy in his class, Dan Marino, was throwing for 15 trillion yards. And Dan was not allowing John to throw until we fell behind by 14 points. He saw Kelly. He saw Montana. He saw Warren Moon. All these guys being able to throw. And all he's doing is handoff. And he's like, well, wait a minute. I'm not a handoff type of guy. I can put up numbers just like they can. And that started, and it started to, and everybody's like, when they started talking about great quarterbacks, they started really leaving him out of the conversation because his numbers wasn't reflective of just how great he was because Dan wouldn't allow him to throw the football. But we get behind, and then he's like, okay, John, go make miracles happen. He could do that, and that bothered John. And you see what John became once, you know, Dan left, Jim Fossil came as our offensive coordinator, and John had his only 4,000-yard season in 93. Thanks to your boy, Skip.
You lived it, Shannon. You lived
no mercy.
Yesterday, Andy Dalton joined Joe Flacco and Cam Newton as veteran QBs in the free agent market. Tim Kowloshoff, the Dallas Morning News, is calling for the Cowboys to sign one of the three vets as insurance in case something were to happen to Dak Prescott. So, Shannon, do the Cowboys need a proven backup for Dak Prescott?
I believe they do, and the Cowboys are the only team that doesn't think they need a quality backup, Skip. We saw how beneficial this was. The Eagles won a Super Bowl because they had a quality backup. Skip, you and I both know, I think we both can agree on this, that had the Eagles not had Nick Foles, they're not winning that Super Bowl. And the thing is now is that these veteran quarterbacks are cheap. We just saw Jameis Winston go for $1.1 million. In base salary, he can earn another $3.4 million in incentives. Well, Jameis Winston made $20 million, almost $21 million last year. So that's a $20 million reduction in pay. Andy Dalton was scheduled to make, I guess, what, $17 million? So you can get him for the cheap. I mean, it's what, $1.1, $1.2 million in base salary? So, Skip, you can get one of these, or Cam, you can get one of these guys for the cheap, Skip. I believe that they need, if something, and knock on wood, Skip, you do it all the time. And Dak, for the most part, he's only been banged up the, like the last two or three games of last year. So he's been a rock. He's been steady. But God forbid something were to happen. Cooper Rush is not taking you anywhere. If something were to happen to Dak and you have to play Cooper Rush, you might as well go on and get ready for the 2021 season because it's not going to happen. You better get somebody that's been there, that's playoff tested, that's gone to the playoffs and knows what it takes. Although Andy Dalton hasn't won a playoff game, Skip, I believe with the cast that they have around him, he wouldn't have to be spectacular in order for them to win a playoff game. We know what Cam has done. He's been an MVP. He's taken a team to the Super Bowl. He was former Rookie of the Year. So we know what Cam is. So they need someone other than Cooper Rush because if something happens to Dak, and I hope it doesn't, Skip, this season's over.
This is the first time all day today I completely agree with everything you just said. In fact, I want to thank my friend Tim Kalishaw for opening my eyes to this problem because I don't think about the problem because it hasn't been a problem for 4 years because Dak has been sensationally durable. He hasn't missed a game. And I am, as you say, I'm knocking on wood on my desk right here, right now, because Shannon, all of a sudden, it's not just about durability with Dak. It's about availability because I have been shocked and disappointed. He is a virtual holdout. I think he's going to be whatever camp there is holdout. He might just be a holdout for games 1 and 2, the way Emmitt Smith was in the 1993 Cowboys season before Jerry had to cave in and sign him. Still don't think Emmitt got quite as much as a lot of people thought, but it took missing 2 games, 2 L's that the Cowboys took for that deal to get done. And it might be this one also this year. So I'm with you. I've watched Cooper Rush a lot for 3 preseasons, but I remind you, Shannon, he's undrafted out of Central Michigan. He looks the part at 6'3", 225, and he plays okay against second and third teamers in the preseason. He's had 8 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. He's okay, but I'm in no rush to see what Cooper Rush could do in place of Dak Prescott in the first 2 real games. No rush. And that's why the prospect of Andy Dalton, he's a native Texan from Katy, which is a Houston suburb, played at TCU, mm-hmm. Texas Christian, which is in Fort Worth, part of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, fairly close to Jerry World. He's got the Texas connections. And frankly, a lot of people thought that Andy Dalton was a backup all those years in Cincinnati because he was kind of a backup quarterback masquerading as a starter. He did make 3 Pro Bowls. He did have some stretches of high-caliber quarterback play. But his mentality is such, he's such a good guy and great teammate. Yeah, he'd be the perfect backup. He's not going to make any waves or rattle any cages or cause any problems for Dak Prescott or Jerry Jones. He would be the perfect backup. But now I'm going to throw this at you because you brought up the name. You invoked Cam's name. If I could snap my fingers right now and have Cam Newton as my backup quarterback going into the season, yes, thank you, God, I'll take it. Now, how you would pay Cam, would he take $1.1 million to play for Dallas? I doubt it, but who knows? Maybe it'd be his best shot. I don't know. But if Cam thought he had a chance to actually get to play some next year for America's team, maybe. I'll say this for Dak. He's got such strong football character, such a football backbone to him. He seems so confident in himself. He wouldn't be threatened by Cam Newton as his backup the way, let's say, there's been speculation about Cam going to the Rams. I think Jared Goff would be threatened by Cam Newton. I think he might crumble a little bit under the pressure of having Cam Newton, former MVP, looking over his shoulder pads. But Dak, no, he would be just fine. And I would be just fine with the all-time former MVP insurance policy of Dak Prescott, of Cam Newton as my backup to Dak. Again, I think this negotiation has gone completely south and is going nowhere slowly. So I'm hoping that they would land him as a backup quarterback, even over Andy Dalton, who might be a better long-term fit, obviously, as a backup quarterback.
Skip, here's the thing, though. Cam, you want to play football? All we have is $1 million, $1.1 million. You can either play for $1.1 million or you can go home and make nothing. Now, let me tell you what happened, Skip.
Okay.
The quickest thing I realized, Skip, after I was out of work for a couple of years, is that when you have money going out and you don't have any coming in, trust me, that'll deplete a savings and a retirement quicker than anything. Also, when I was a kid, Skip, I didn't really know the importance of insurance because we were never going to the doctor. So I didn't think you, insurance for what? If you had a toothache, my grandfather pulled a tooth. So I didn't know anything that, but as you get older, hopefully you never have to use insurance, but it's great to have just in case you do. You hope nothing ever happens to Dak Prescott, Skip. But it's a nice luxury to have if you got Cam or you got Andy Dalton as opposed to Cooper Rush. That's all I'm saying, Skip Bayless. So for me, when I look at it, the big money is not going to be there, Skip, because why? Why would I pay a guy $3 million when there are no other teams out there that's offering that? It's not like they're getting into a bidding war. Well, like Sean Payton said, they wanted this guy, but he had committed to being a free agent for Carolina. Sean Payton said, well, we'll give you this. And his agent says, well, we've already committed to going to Carolina. Sean Payton trades back into the round because they have no more draft picks. He gives up a draft pick next year to take the guy in, I think, the sixth round, Skip. And he says, I was asking, seven. Now I'm taking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Skip, so now the thing is, that's yeah. it. There are no bidding wars going on for Cam or Andy Dalton. So Skip, it's not like they have the choice, like, well, I want to go here for $5 million or I can go there for, it's not there. It's a very small market, and go to a fit. Now, I'm not saying, Skip, just go anywhere. Go somewhere that you think is going to be a good fit, that you're going to be able to learn, and you can be able to you can help if something were to happen. And I think the Dallas would be foolish not to at least kick the tires or interview or talk to virtual, however you're going to do it, however they do it now, Skip, Andy Dalton or Cam.
So here's the punchline to this discussion. Do you realize that very, very quietly back on March 18th, pandemic is starting to hit. NFL free agency is about to hit. A move was made in Dallas that went completely under the radar. Do you realize they re-signed Cooper Rush for $2.1 million? So Cooper Rush makes $1 million more going into next year than Jameis is going to make in New Orleans to back up Drew Brees. It's mind-blowing to me. But remember, Shannon, they did sign Kai Forbath or re-sign him as their kicker, and then Greg Zuerlein came available, and they said, whoops, okay, let's go sign him for a lot more money. So maybe they could figure out how to get out from under the Cooper Rush thing as quickly as possible in favor of a proven quality backup.
Well, Skip, if you've already given him guaranteed money, you can't recoup that, but you just basically eat it. And it seems to me Dallas should be or would be willing to eat, considering that Andy Dalton or Cam Newton would be your backup to Dak Prescott. And if something unforeseen happened, Skip, you would have to feel a lot more comfortable moving forward with Andy Dalton or Cam than you would Cooper Rush. Now, Skip, he might can play. They might like what they've seen in practice. They might have seen enough in preseason games that we really like Cooper Rush. But I think I'm going to go with the proven commodities as opposed to an unproven commodity, especially with so much at stake. Skip, it's playoff or bust for the Cowboys. It ain't no more 9-7, 8-8. It's playoffs. It's winning divisions. It's going deep, Skip. Even playoffs not good enough. You need to get to the NFC Championship game, possible Super Bowl for this thing to be a success.
Playoffs or bust. I agree with that
one. No mercy.
Did every first-year outcome for all first-round NFL draft picks. They had Tua Tagovailoa starting 12 games for Miami, and they pointed to the uncertainty about how well he has recovered from his hip injury. So, Shannon, how soon should the Dolphins start Tua Tagovailoa? When do you want to see it happen?
Skip, I think they have a great luxury of having a veteran quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick that's already there. who's played in the, had a year in this system and played very well down the stretch, Skip. Now, for me, I believe that the expectation is that Ryan Fitzpatrick will start the season. I believe he goes into camp as the number one quarterback, and I believe he'll start the season. Now, at some point in time, Skip, if it's not beneficial, let's just say they're 0-4, they're 1-5, I believe they will then turn to Tua. Because, Skip, look, no matter how great a rookie is, he's going to struggle at times. And I believe that once you go to a rookie, you stick with him. And this is why I believe that you start Fitzpatrick first, because you can always go to Tua. But it's just hard, Skip, when you start a rookie and he struggles, to yank him. You don't want to do anything to mess with his confidence. And you remember last year, Skip, Daniel Jones, they started Eli, and then once Eli struggled, they brought Daniel Jones in. And it wasn't until Daniel Jones got hurt that Eli got an opportunity to play again. And once Jones was healthy, he went back into the starting lineup. I believe you'll see a very similar situation to this. You're not worried about 12 games this year. You're worried about the next 12 years. And I believe this is the best plan for Tua.
Time out. I asked you again and again before the draft, do you have any injury concern about Tua going forward? Because I had huge concerns. You repeatedly told me zero concerns about his long-term health. All I read, all I heard from independent doctors was that he's now 1,000% healthy and that every MRI of his surgically repaired hip, pristine, meaning it was perfect. The surgery was 1,000% successful. So given that, and given the fact that Shannon Sharp assured me that Tua is better than Joe Burrow, wait a second. Joe Burrow's going to start for the woeful Bengals? He'll start game one. He'll get thrown into that fire.
And what did they do?
Sort of did, speed his growth,
didn't they get rid of Andy Dalton? Didn't they get Andy Dalton out of there? So if there was no Ryan Fitzpatrick, absolutely he would start. But you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, Skip, so there is no need.
Time out. You have told me repeatedly on this show, Ryan Fitzpatrick is an every other year wonder, that just when you come to trust him, to depend on him, to expect that what he did last year, he'll do next year, you're in trouble. You're always disappointed by Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
So he did play pretty to very well last year. Yeah, he beat the Eagles late in the year. He went up to Foxborough, and he beat Belichick's defense with a last-ditch late-game drive. Yep, he did.
He beat Tom Brady.
He
beat Tom Brady. Yes, he did.
80 yards in 13 plays with 2 minutes left to beat the vaunted Belichick's overrated and exposed defense. That's what Ryan Fitzpatrick did to knock Tom Brady out of the two seed after he did what he always did, which was another fourth quarter game-winning drive that got canceled by Belichick's overrated defense. But the point is, Tua is in the perfect spot with a much better team and roster than Joe Burrow has in Cincinnati to start from the start. I don't get it. If he's what you say he is, both health-wise and ability-wise, a lot of people say, oh, he's special. He's freakishly. He can do lightning release, deadly accurate, blah, 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 blah. And I'm saying, no, I'm not buying, I'm not seeing, and I'm not trusting health. So I think I'm getting validated if he doesn't start game one. And I think you're getting sunk if he doesn't stay game one, because you're going to hear about it from me.
Skip, it's not like the cupboard is bare in Cincinnati. You know, they do have A.J. Green. They do have Tyler Boyd. Joe Mixon ran for 1,000 yards last year. So it's not like the cupboard is bare when it comes to offensive weapons. They have some. Now, they need to fill out that offensive line, and we don't know what they're going to be like defensively. But, Skip, you are in – look, I get it. You know, you want to see Tua start and all that. You want to see him struggle. But it's not going to happen. They're going to bring him along nice and slow, and over the next 10 years, I will prove to be right, because my guy will be better than your guy. I don't even know who your guy is, but I'm assuming it's Joe Burrow. But I just want to know one thing. Why do you do this? When Peyton Manning and Tom Brady used to go head-to-head, and Manning would lose, they would say, Brady beat Manning. They never said, Brady beat Tony Dungy's defense. Now, when quarterbacks beat Tom Brady, they beat Belichick's defense. Why is that?
So I must tell you, my microphone just fell off, so I'm going to have to hold it here.
Good.
And Ernestine does such a great job of miking me up in the morning and running my camera. She's downstairs right now because she's turned into this sort of compulsive cooker cleaner, which it's just the age, the time that we're in. But she'll be up here in just a moment to fix my microphone. But at least it gives me a chance to point out that once again on Friday, I'm wearing goat on goat. So you can see my microphone, but you can also see my Lil Wayne necklace, goat on Jumpman logo, goat. And that's all you need to know as we head towards Sunday night and we get to see the true goat in action in episodes 5 and 6. So again, to sum this up, Burrow will be better than Tua and Burrow will do what should have happened to Tua. He will start from game one. And I think you are afraid of Tua's health. And I think you're also afraid of his ability.
Oh, I'm definitely not afraid of his ability. I'm not afraid of his health. And I believe that he gonna probably miss the first couple of games because Fitzpatrick's going to be in there. And he'll probably stink it up. And then Tua will come in there and light it up and be rookie of the year. Ta-da. And there you have it.
No mercy.